Okay, thank you everyone for coming. And I muted everybody, my apologies, but if you want to talk, you can talk. You just push your space bar or something and you get in. Just for the sake of being able to get through a lot of material in a little bit of time. So maybe just take a note of your question and we'll try to get to it if we can at the end, if I don't cover it. But let me just go in the order that my brain works, if you don't mind. Okay, first of all, I just want to repeat and finish off a little bit, tweak the thought that I ended off with last week. And that is that very important halacha of Mechiras Chametz. Mechiras Chametz is, as everybody knows, that's an instrument that's used to get chametz out of your property. And chametz, everything that we're going to talk about tonight is only talking about chametz which you own. So therefore, if you sell whatever you might sell, then there's no issue of chametz. For instance, as an example, you might want to sell your toaster or your toaster oven. You might want to sell your chametz pots. That works, but you have to put it in a special place and write on it Machur L'chametz, Machur L'goy, and then you know it's in the Mechira, and that has two purposes, writing it on there, a little sticker writing there, that it's sold to a goy, serves two purposes. One is it stops you from using it, and the more important thing is, because probably you're not going to use it, the more important thing is that in order to make a sale of chametz, it has to be in a very defined area. So there's two ways to make it defined. Either you can put on your chametz list that when you sell your chametz to a rabbi, through a rabbi, I should say. So either you're going to have to list every single place which you keep your chametz, but better and easier for me and less documentation is if we could just write every place that's sold to a guy is marked, sold to a guy. And that includes not just pots and pans, but let's say you have cabinets in your kitchen which are going to be used for chametz, and maybe they're always used for chametz. Let's say you keep, you know, like maybe you have a cabinet that you keep your flour in and your coffee in and that type of a thing. So you can close it off. And even if it has, even like your dish cabinet, if you close it off and sell it to a guy, even if there's crumbs of chametz in there, it doesn't make a difference as long as it's sealed off. It's important for me to say here that a number of the things that we're going to talk about here are not necessarily what you're going to find in Pesach directories. Mostly it is, but on the internet. I'm telling you what I'm makabel from my Rebbe and what I was makabel a lot of the halachas of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So this is a very American shir, but Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Hador, and certainly we can rely on him. And it's a little bit different than is the Minhag Eretz Yisrael, which is okay. Nobody should be worried about that. And we're going to talk about how to kosher your kitchen. Before I do that, I just want to define my terms. The archenemy here, number one, is chametz. Chametz. In order for something to be chametz, it has to be made out of something which you can make matzah out of. The Gemara says that if you can't make matzah out of it, then it's not chametz. And you can only make matzah out of five grains: wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye. Those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5: wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye. If it's made with any of that, if your product is made with that, certainly if you have that, it's still not chametz because, for example, a matzah is made out of wheat or spelt or oats or rye. So it doesn't make it chametz just because it's wheat, but it does make it chametz when it's added to water, or when you put water in it, which is almost everything. Like, for instance, they wash the spelt before they use it, before they sell it to you. It's clean, and it has water in it. So that's why those things are considered chametz. But to look at it in an intelligent way is it has chametz because maybe it was mixed with water. Theoretically, If never touched water, let's say you have a lot of people say that if you have a one of those vacuum packed, barley beans or something. So even though that's chametz, but some say it never came in contact with water. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't use it on Pesach, but maybe you're allowed to own it. So in order something to be chametz is wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye. 700 or 800 years ago, the Rabbanim of Ashkenaz of Europe added on something which is called kitnius. Kitnius comes from the word katan, katan, little things, and mostly things that you can make flour out of, and it can get mixed up, it can get confused. So the Ashkenazi, I don't know what was going on in Poland and in Germany at that time. I guess we could research it, but it's really not that important. Ashkenazi Jewry has taken upon itself to also, in a certain way, to consider kitnius to be chametz. Kitnius usually is translated as legumes. You have to know what's a legume and what's not a legume. But it's not just legumes, it's kitnius. So for instance, rice, I'm not sure if rice is a legume or it's not a legume, but it's rice. We don't eat rice on Pesach. So the list of 700 years ago or 800 years ago was rice, millet, legumes, all kinds of beans, like chickpeas, that's goes into a legume. Corn, which probably didn't exist as for human consumption at that time, but that's considered a legume. Fenugreek, which is chilba, I believe. Flaxseed, lentils, mustard, peas, all kinds of things that were around 700-800 years ago when they made this minhag of kitnius. They said that should also be considered usser. Comes to Moshe Feinstein and he says, but listen, let's just be careful here. What's usser is usser. First of all, the Sephardim never accepted this. So the Sephardim eat popcorn, they eat rice cakes. There's no problem at all. But the with the Ashkenazim, and I presume most of us here are Ashkenazim and are careful about kidneys. But Ramosha said the list is the list. There's no halachic necessity to add things to the list because you think or anybody thinks that this should be usher on Pesach because it looks too much like flour to me. Just give you to illustrate this point. A number of years ago, the Badatz Eide Charedus came along and said that potato starch is usher because potato starch looks like flour. And I don't think they say it anymore, actually, but at the time, that's what they said. Can't use potato starch on Pesach. Looks like flour. You can use it like flour. It has a lot of properties of flour, but it's made out of potatoes. Now, the potatoes were not around 700-800 years ago. I don't know how they made cholent, but they weren't around as we have them today. And therefore, potatoes don't go into the category. Certainly, it's not chametz, but it doesn't go into the category of kidneys or legumes. Potatoes and anything that you can get out of a potato is mutter. Same thing is true with sweet potatoes. Anything you can get out of a sweet potato is mutter. So that's one thing that Ramosha taught us, which is extremely, extremely important because there's all kinds of products out there which that it says on that you can only eat this if you don't eat kidneys, and really you can eat it. The other thing before I enumerate some of those, the other thing that Ramosha says is that a dover hayotze mina kidneys is mutter. What that means is that if something is made from kidneys, but it's not kidneys, a derivative, a kidneys derivative does not go into that gzera of kidneys. So for instance, if you make oil out of the kidneys or vinegar out of the kidneys, so it should be okay. So for instance, rice oil, is there such a thing as rice oil, or for that matter, rapeseed oil, which is another word for canola oil, and peanut oil, and sunflower seed oil. Those are all, I don't think peanuts are even kidneys to begin with, but if they are, it's a yotze min hakidneys. So Ramosha taught us two things that we have to remember all the time. Number one is that it has to have been around. Quinoa, for instance, was not around in Ashkenaz 700-800 years ago. That's something that came about much later. At least in our diet, it came about much later. It might have been eaten in South America or something, but it wasn't eaten by Ashkenazi Jewry. So it's not in the klal of kidneys, even though it might seem like it should be kidneys quinoa. You can use it. And the same thing is with all peanut oil and many of the oils that are on the market. However, in order for it to be kosher, l'Pesach, you have to make sure it is what it is. And the only way to do that is to get a hechsher on it. So you can't just go out and buy or use your canola oil. It has to be canola oil, which is kosher l'Pesach. And if it says only for those la'ochle kidneys, so lo nora, because in this regard, I think we can be an ochle kidneys. So if it's one of the original kidneys, it's might be usher, but even then a derivative can be mutter. And the new things, so to speak, as long as it's kosher l'Pesach, let's say for Sfardim, and it has a good hashgacha, which you don't find so much in America, because America is mostly Ashkenazi Jews. Israel is mostly Sephardi Jews. So most people that keep Pesach in Eretz Israel eat popcorn. And we can't eat popcorn because corn is considered a kidneys, but corn oil, if it's kosher l'Pesach, so we could eat it. Now you may have your minhagim, so stick with it. I'm not telling you not to stick with it. I'm just telling you what's kosher according to halacha and according to the very, very important psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now I'm going to go through koshering your kitchen. I just want to say this, that a lot of people ask about medicines. So medicine, of course, if you need medicine, you take medicine, and medicine is not, if you have to take medicine for blood pressure or for your heart or for something important, not just, cosmetic things. Excuse me, I'm just going to close the window. Unless you want musical background. medicine is, if you need it, it's okay. And why is it okay if it's chametz? The reason it's okay is because you don't really eat medicine. It's something you just pop a pill. So it's not really, in that sense, it's not real chametz to begin with. So if you really need it, we don't pop bread pills. But if you really need it, you can take it. And you don't have to worry that much about your medicine. Of course, if you can get it without chametz, so who wants to eat chametz? But if you can't, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Usually in medicine, I would say 90% of the time, what it's not really chametz anyway. What it is that the binder is made out of cornstarch. So the medicine is, in most cases, I'm not going, there's lists and lists of medicine. I'm not even sure why they have all those lists, given that you're allowed to take medicine if you need it. But if it's bound with cornstarch, then it has kidneys. So you shouldn't just eat it for the heck of it. But it's not really achila. It's not really called eating. And cornstarch is a kidneys derivative. So you're okay with that. The exception might be, and this keeps on coming up, is a lot of people take cough medicines, for instance, a syrup, some type of a syrup or some kind of a syrup, which is a fever reducer. So these things, that is achila. They're made to taste good. That's what it's for. It's made for taste and it's made to make it. So, take a little bit of that syrup. It's like taking a little glass of schnapps, and schnapps is chametz. So there you have to be careful, because that really is kidneys and you should eat it. Sometimes it may even be chametz. And if the corn syrup is indicated medically, so then you should ask a shaila if it's really indicated medically. If it's just to give you a little bit of relief, or like a cough drop, it's just for a little bit of relief. So it's so you don't eat that.
Okay.
Sorry. Did somebody want to say something? Okay. Let me go on to koshering the kitchen. And important to remember this, that a whole year, when it comes to, let's say, eating treif or mixing milk and meat and all the things we're worried about all year. So there can, I don't know, can if everyone could just mute themselves.
Yeah. I should
Thank you. Okay, I muted everyone. A whole year when it comes to milchix, fleishix, even treif. So there's all kinds of halachas in Shulchan Aruch about what's batel b'shishim and what you're not allowed to, what you are allowed to eat and how much is it. Chametz doesn't go into any of those categories. And the reason for that is because chametz, the Torah said, is usher in a mashehu. Even a drop of chametz is usher. Even a drop of chametz is aser. A mashehu. A mashehu means like a mashehu means this. Let's say I'll give you an example of a mashehu. Let's say you buy milk, and the milk has in it vitamin D, and the vitamin D is usually and everybody wants to have vitamin D these days, right? I mean that's what we're all looking for is vitamin D. Vitamin D usually is a wheat derivative and it's chametz gummer. And even though you're only putting like a drop or two drops into it comes in the milk or you're putting it into your food, however you're taking there's no such thing as 60 times as much. It's chametz. You have to make sure if you want to take vitamin D, which is a good idea for all of us to take vitamin D and boost our immune system. You have to make sure it's not chametz. It's probably one of the most important halachas this year is that a vitamin D has to have a good hechsher. Somebody asked, I saw, about supplements. Supplements is the same as medicine. You have to know, first of all, what is it made out of? I mean, I take a few supplements and the supplements say on it, no grain. It can't be chametz. But if it does have chametz in it, so now you have to know if it really is medically indicated. You have to know that it's just helping you, that it is helping you, and it's not just a boost or if it really has some kind of a medical reason for it. Because chametz in ingredients is us or even a drop, so therefore... We come into the whole idea of kalim, dishes, pots, pans, and allow me to explain this for a moment. If you have a keli like this, not like this because this is glass, but if you have a keli and you've had chametz in this keli, beer or something hot, so now there's two things that can happen. One thing that can happen is that the chametz, and this is, the Torah tells us this, we wouldn't know it, the chametz has absorbed into the walls of your keli. This is called, in the words of halacha, this is called chametz balua. There's another kind of chametz which just might be like, let's say you have a pot and you just couldn't, your cholim pot, you just couldn't scrape it and clean it properly and it still has chametz in it from the barley or from the beans or whatever it might be. So that's not called chametz balua, that's called chametz davuk. What's the difference? The difference is, and this is, many people don't understand this, that chametz balua, you can kasher. Chametz davuk, you cannot kasher. You can't dip it into hot water and it becomes okay. That would be like taking a piece of bread and dip it in water. So every time you eat pasta, that's what you're doing. The Haggadah doesn't take, the Haggadah, meaning the koshering it with hot water, which I'm going to explain in a minute, does not get rid of chametz davuk. Does everyone understand the distinction? Chametz balua, chametz davuk. Most of what we're going to talk about is chametz balua. I have a chametz dikah pot or a chametz dikah fork and knife. That you don't means like you washed it, right? It's clean. It's not like it has, but it's balua. The minute it actually has stuff on it, which sometimes it can have, that's not chametz balua, that's chametz davuk. And not only you can't kasher the chametz, but you can't kasher it anyways because you can't kasher anyways because the hot water doesn't get to every place because you have that stuff on it. You have chametz on it. So that's a very, very important difference. There are two kinds of kashering, and nothing has changed since last year and the year before and all the years you've been keeping Pesach. The only thing that's changed is me a little bit, but in my understanding of it, which I hope will be to your benefit. there's two kinds of koshering in the kitchen: pots, pans, forks, countertops, sinks, ovens. There's two kinds of kosher. One of them is called, and please learn the exact definition of these words. One of them is called hagola, hey, gimel, ayin, lamed, hey, hagola. And hagola means, does anybody know what the word hagola means? Let's is there a Hebraist here? Nobody. Hagola means, the word means to extract. I have chametz in the keli, and hagola means with the Torah is telling us a way to extract the chametz from the keli so it's no longer there. That's one method of koshering things for Pesach is hagola. Another method of koshering things for Pesach is called libun. Libun is where you heat it up with a fire, a blowtorch, a barbecue, however you're heating it up, to such a degree that you're not extracting the chametz. What you're rather doing is destroying the chametz. And there's different ways to do hagala. There's different ways to do libun. Remember, I was just talking a minute ago about chametz balua and chametz davuk. Chametz balua, it's absorbed in the keli. You can do hagala, you can do libun. But chametz davuk doesn't help you to dip it into water because you're not extracting the thing. It's right there. It's not about cleaning, it's extracting. So the only way you can do this is by doing libun. So, and it's a little bit complex and worrisome and makes people nervous, you know, hot water and all that stuff, but it's extremely doable. I'm going to explain to you how to do it. But by and large, if you have pots and pans that have some stains in it and things like that, the best thing to do is to put it away and use a Pesach like a pan. If you're really stuck on a certain pot, or you don't have another pot, that's when we're talking about hagola. Some things, it's just too hard to get new for Pesach. So for instance, your kitchen sink, it's too hard to get a new sink for Pesach, or a new oven, or a new countertop. You're not going to get a new countertop. So that's when we start koshering. And remember, two ways to kosher. Some things you can do with hagola, and some things you have to do libun. Besides, for everything else, there's no way in your oven. Yes, you're going to take hot water and put your oven into hot water. It's just not practical to do such a thing. So, being that it's not practical to do such a thing, there's no provision for libun, for hagola on an oven. You have to do libun on an oven. But it's important for me that everybody understands that I want to speak a little bit on a higher level, because you're high-level people, that you have to always know when you look at something, you have to always know, am I going to put this away for Pesach and sell it with the chametz? Or am I going to do hagola on it? Or am I going to do libun on it? That's the question we always have to ask. And in a minute, we'll talk about different ways of doing libun and different ways of doing hagola. Everybody with me so far? It's late at night. I don't want to put everyone to sleep. I want you to. Okay. Hagolas kelim.
Rabbi Haber?
Yeah.
Can I just ask you to make one distinction? When you say selling the keli to the goy, selling the keli with the chametz, you mean selling the chametz on the keli, not the keli itself, right?
No, this is where I've changed.
Okay.
It's very, very clear to me that you sell the whole cabinet. Means like if you have a chametz cabinet, like in your kitchen, put your dishes in there, your pots and pans in there, and just sell the whole thing. And the reason I'm saying this, the reason why the Rebbetzin is surprised by this, is because I've always felt that don't sell your dishes to a goy, because if you sell your dishes to a goy, then you might have to toivel them after Pesach, yeah? Because if you buy dishes back, or buy dishes at all from a goy, you have to title them. So what do? Sell the chametz on the dishes. On the other hand, I saw that Rav David Feinstein, or Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says, who's buying crumbs? There's no market for crumbs. And since there's no market for the chametz on the dishes, it's ridiculous, he says, to sell them. So what do? Sell the vessel with it and rely on all the poskim that say that you don't have to teufel it if the guy didn't even touch it. In other words, if the guy actually comes to your house, takes it out, and then gives it back to you, then you have to teufel. So what we're doing is I want to be machmir. This is my my new thinking here. I want to be machmir on the one hand and mekel on the other hand. I want to be machmir and just sell the dishes and any chametz there or any chametz that's even in the cabinet, whatever you have around, just sell it and just mark it to the guy. And include the kalim in it and include everything in it, because I don't know how you sell. I mean, Rav David Feinstein doesn't know how you can sell the chametz on the kalim. So this is the new chumrah / kula that we're doing there. Is that clear? Yeah. So you're going to put it away and sell it. If you need to kasher things, I always say that here in Beit Shemesh and Eretz Yisrael, they have all kinds of koshering areas, meaning like you go to the park and you pay the guy 5 shekel and he koshers your pot or something if it's perfectly clean. And that's a good thing. That's a nice service for people. You don't have to get involved with the boiling hot water and everything. But I want to just say to you that I didn't grow up with that. When you have to kosher a pot, you koshered the pot. It's a nice service, but it's not necessarily that they're the only ones that know how to do it. Here's what's involved with koshering something for Pesach. I will tell it to you in 1 minute. You clean whatever you want to kosher. Let's talk about a fork. Let's say you want to use your silverware. You have special silverware. You want to use it for Pesach. Mutar, beseder. So what do? You have to get it, first of all, perfectly clean. And a lot of the issues that existed for generations, like rust, you don't have rust on your silverware. Probably it's stainless steel. So you don't have any rust issues like they used to have in Europe. They have stainless steel today. Even the knives, which in the olden days, they didn't kosher because the knife was like a very expensive porcelain, let's say, handle. And then they stuck a knife in it. That's not what the knives that most of us have. If you have such a knife, you can't kosher it. But regular forks and knives, let's say you want to kosher it. So you want to get it completely clean, spick and span. Really clean, because if there's some little piece on it, that's going to stop it from being kosher. And that the guy in the park's not going to help you with, because you got to bring him clean stuff anyway. Now you put that stuff that you want to kosher, put it away for 24 hours and don't use it. And I'll explain to you why you have to do that. Now you want to take a pot, preferably a Pesach pot. You take a Pesach pot. Doesn't have to be clean. It's a Pesach pot. And you fill it up, let's say, 3/4 with water, and you boil the water. So far, easy to do. Everybody does it, right? Boil water. Everyone knows how to boil water. You take tongs, once it's boiling. You take your fork. You don't want to burn yourself. So you take it in tongs. Am I using the right word? And you take it, you put it in the water. If you can loosen it a little bit, that's good. Otherwise, you put it in twice. Otherwise, you just drop it into the water. And on the way down, it's getting kosher. So far, everybody can handle this, right? Finished. That's so you know how to do Haggadah. That's how you do Haggadah. It's a very simple thing. The only thing I'll tell you is that when you put something into the water, it stops boiling because the fork or the knife or whatever it is you're putting in automatically cools it off. So between fork and fork, you have to make sure it's boiling again. So says the Rama. And you do it in the Pesach pot. What happens in the Pesach pot? Why doesn't the Pesach pot now become chametz? Can you forgive me for a moment, sir? I apologize for my neighbors. if you're putting something chametz, here's my question to you. You're putting something chametz into a Pesach tikka pot and you're boiling it. So now you made the Pesach tikka pot chametz, right? So what's going on here? The answer is that if you wait 24 hours before you kosher it, so now your fork or your pan or pot or whatever it might be cannot any longer make the pot chametz stick. You do this before Pesach and it can't make the pot chametz stick. And that's why we hold everything away on the side for 24 hours and we don't use it particularly for anything hot. You can clean it within 24 hours, but you don't use it within 24 hours before you kosher it. And I've just taught you how to kosher everything. You could do it at home by yourself. It's a very easy thing to do. You don't need anything. You don't need the park. You don't need a YouTube video. You don't need anything. It's a very, very simple thing to do. Pesach tikka pot, you boil the water. You don't have to, unlike, people get confused about this, unlike tevilas kalim, when you have to take something to the mikveh. So there the rule is you have to put the whole thing in at one time, let go of a little bit, and make sure that it's all in at one time. You can't teufel something half and then another half. You can't do that. With koshering, you can. With koshering, you can put half in, turn it around, and do the other half. So if you have a big thing, like a small pot that you want to put into the big pot, but you just, it's hard for you to get it in all at one time because it's too big. So then you take it, you do half, make sure you did, the best thing is like to try to do 3/4 of it so you know you're covered. You take it out and do the other half. So it's and you could do it half at a time. That's the halacha. And the halacha is you can drop things in there and keep them in there like silverware. I find that's the easier way to do it. That's anything which requires hagala. What requires hagala? I should have said at the beginning. So the Chumash tells us the answer to this. The Chumash says that kol asher yavai lam b'mayim, anything, it's a pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar, that anything that became treif or chametz or milchix or fleishix through cooking, water cooking, the definition of cooking is you're using water, or you, it's a wet thing. So anything which became treif that way or chametz that way, that's how you do hagala, which is to extract it. And Rashi explains the pasuk, and he says, "Kiboiloi kach poltoi," that the same way it went in, on the same highway that chametz is going to come out. So you wait till the chametz is at least 24 hours old. You put it in. If it became chametz through cooking, as opposed, what everything became chametz through cooking. How does something not become chametz through cooking? The answer is, if you have a frying pan, so a frying pan did not become chametz through cooking. It became chametz through frying. What's the difference between frying and cooking? You know better than me. The difference between frying and cooking is you don't put water in the frying pan, right? You just put something there so it shouldn't stick, or you use Teflon, but you're frying, meaning you're actually using the fire. To this, the pasuk says, kol davar asher yavoi ba'esh, anything which became chametz or treif or milchix or fleishix through fire, the way you have to take it out is with fire. What is that called? We said it a few minutes ago. That's called libun. Libun means it's not good enough to extract the chametz because fire is very, very strong. Frying pans get very, very hot. It's not good enough to extract the chametz out of the frying pan. You have to destroy the chametz in the frying pan. And the same thing is true with your oven. And the same thing is true with all chametz. Remember our terms, I hope you remember, with all chametz davuk. Once it's not balua, but it's there, it might be actually on there. There's a piece you just can't get off or something very common in oven racks. So now it's not good enough to extract that chametz. You need to destroy the chametz. And everything I'm going to say for the next few minutes is just how to do hagala, which I've explained mostly, and how to do libun, and what needs what. It can't become chametz. Let's talk about chametz. It can't become chametz unless it was hot. So your refrigerator, perforce, does not require any koshering. Refrigerators tend to be cold. So you don't have to kosher a refrigerator, the only case would be if you would take a very hot pot and put it in the refrigerator, you know, if you do that, and then you want to use that same shelf for another hot pot, that would be a question. But let's assume that this is not usually what we're doing. The minhag, you know, when I was growing up, the minhag was you cover the refrigerator shelves with the aluminum foil and that, some type of a covering. This too has changed over the years because maybe I'm wrong about my statistics, but I think most refrigerator shelves are made out of glass these days. So made out of glass is a whole different story. Glass is something different. You just have to, all you have to do is wash it. So it's not like those wire grates that my mother had. That's not what it is. So most people's refrigerators are made out of, you have a new refrigerator. Probably it's made out of glass. All you need to do is wash it. If you're worried that maybe there's some actual chametz, covering is not going to help so much. If you're worried that there's some actual chametz there, you're not going to take a blowtorch and burn your refrigerator. So what you do is this. Here, listen to me carefully. You take something which, if there is some chametz there, if there is some crumbs there somewhere in your refrigerator, you take something which is going to make it inedible. Here's my suggestion. Windex, you know, the blue stuff, or almost any color, something that's toxic. If you spritz that all around your refrigerator, for instance, so anything that chametz became inedible. If you get all the spots, it's inedible. And that's really the best thing to do, and the only thing you have to do with your refrigerator. You want to do more? Please do more. You can cover it with aluminum foil. You can take a blowtorch to your refrigerator, but you don't have to, because a refrigerator doesn't become chametz to begin with. If there's actual chametz there, clean it, and if you feel you haven't cleaned it, spritz it. That's it. Countertop. I'm going to get to the oven because that's the doozy, but let me get to the countertop. A countertop is more complicated. Why? Because a countertop, very often, you do take hot things and put it on the countertop, yes? So, and in fact, if you bake and you would make, let's say you make challah. So challah is obviously chametz, it's bread. And if you take challah and you put it hot, straight out of the oven, on your countertop, you'll take off, you'll see it was moist there. So that's a challah, as the Shulchan Aruch already tells us, is an example of hot, straight out of the oven, and even wet, because there's moisture there. Now you've made your countertop chametz. So unlike the refrigerator, where it's glass and it's cold, this is a little bit different. Your countertops are a little bit different, and therefore you have to make sure that your countertops are kosher l'Pesach. Very important. How do you do that? And here we have to spend a minute to talk about what your countertops are made of. You're made out of. You may not know, because I don't know what my countertop is made of. There's a few choices here. One choice is Formica. One choice is like Israeli composite, which is like what the builders give you. And another choice is, if you're lucky enough, you have like solid stone, a granite countertop. And some people have. I haven't seen it too much, but I guess some people have like a stainless steel countertop, or at least part of your countertop is stainless steel. So the story is like this. Again, I refer to the Chumash. Anything that's made out of stone, any pure, real stone, anything that's made out of wood, did you know you can kosher wood? Anything that means, theoretically, that spoon that you use for the wooden spoon you use for the spaghetti, you can kosher that. Anything that's made out of metal, any kind of metal, you can kosher. So if your countertop is made out of any of those, you can kosher it. So what does that mean? It means that the way you kosher it is, you're going to take the same way that you koshered your fork, except instead of putting the fork in the water, you're going to put the water on the countertop. And what that means is you're going to take, best thing would be is if you have like one of those electric kettles and it gets very hot, and before it even stops boiling, you pour it over every inch of your granite or your metal or your wood, every inch. And that is extracting. You make sure it's dry, you make sure it's clean, and then you're extracting the, you don't have to put a blowtorch on it. You just have to pour boiling hot water on it, but you have to do it everywhere. The same thing is true, by the way, with your sink. If you have a steel sink, metal, stainless steel, same thing. Just the same thing you're doing on the counter, you do on the sink. And you take your, you'll have to use like maybe, depending on the size of your kitchen, obviously, you might have to fill up your kumkum, you know, your hot water thing, maybe six times, seven times. You take it and you pour it over every inch of the sink. You pour it every inch of the counter. And you're done. You're good for Pesach. You don't have to cover it after that. You don't have to do anything. It's there. You're all set with Pesach. So if you're lucky enough to have a granite countertop, you know, like when people are building their kitchens, if I can get my opinion in, I always tell them try to use granite, because granite you could always kasher from milchuk to fleishuk and from chametz to, or even from treif. Granite is granite. Or if you moved into a house which is granite, you're good to go. On the other hand, if it's something that we don't kasher, what don't we kasher? You can't kasher kli cheres. You can't kasher any type of porcelain, any type of
boys. Hi.
Hello. You can't kasher anything which is made, any earthenware.
How are you? Also, you have to make your beds, okay? I dusted. I cleaned your windows, so be careful because the left goats is good.
Can everyone just mute themselves? Thank you.
Okay. I just muted everybody. When it comes to any type of earthenware, that means your china, and that means if you happen to have an earthenware counter, which is possible these days because people have ceramic type counters made with ceramic, then there's no kashering it. Also, on Pesach, and this is very important, on Pesach, because of it's so, we're so machmer with chametz, even a drop, so we don't kasher plastic on Pesach. Whether you can kasher it all year is not the subject of this shiur tonight, but whether you can kasher it on Pesach, we don't kasher plastic, generally speaking. There's exceptions, which I'll tell you, we don't kasher plastics on Pesach. So that means if you have a Formica countertop, that's plastic. If you anything is made out of polymer, if you have an Israeli, I forget what they call it, Caesar stone, it's called Evan Kesar. If you have Caesar stone, I'm not sure what it had to do with Caesar, but what they do is they take, this is an Israeli thing, they take all kinds of different stones and they put it into a factory, they put it into a machine, they add glue to it and plastics to it, and then they make you something that looks stone-like, but it's not really stone, 100% stone. It's stone and plastics and glues, so you can't really kosher that. You can only kosher stone or wood or metal. So what do you have to do if you have a Formica countertop? Then you have to cover it. The right thing to do is to cover it. So a lot of people, I don't go into a lot of kitchens, but I know like in my kitchen, I don't have a kosherable surface as far as I know. I'm not sure what that is, but it's not a kosherable surface. But the sink, for instance, is kosherable. So what I do is I kosher the sink with boiling hot water, and the rest we cover with aluminum foil. They have a very thick grade of aluminum foil that you can buy before Pesach in almost all the Pesach stores or hardware stores, and it's you got to be careful not to cut yourself on it. It gets kind of sharp, but you cut it to size. You can cut it with a blade, with a scissors. You cut it to size, and you put it down, and you tape down the edges so you don't cut yourself with some kind of duct tape, which is waterproof, and that's how you kosher your countertop and your sink for Pesach. If you have a ceramic sink, like enamel sink, enamel is ceramic on top of metal. That's what enamel is. So if you have an enamel sink or a ceramic sink made out of actual earthenware, then you can't kosher. You cannot kosher that. And the only thing you can do We shouldn't get those sinks, but the only thing you can do is cover it. Covering your sink is a difficult thing. How do you cover your sink? So the answer is you have to find some kind of a plastic insert that goes into your sink and use it that way. When I talk about koshering the sink, I just want to say I'm also including the faucet and I'm also including the handles. You should pour boiling hot water on everything. And not only that, even the spout, you should, you know, the spout is where the water comes out of. You should kosher that too. And the reason is because if you make a pot of spaghetti and it's giving out smoke and everything, and now you hold it under the water, so that chametz smoke is going into your faucet. And the only way to kosher it is the same way that it got in. You have to take some boiling hot water, and you can't. It's hard to pour upwards. So what you do is you take some boiling hot water. Let's say this is my spout, and I take the boiling hot water and still in a kli rishon, and I put the faucet, the spout into that, and that's what's koshering it. If you want to be more machmer, you can unscrew the piece and buy another one. But I'm just telling you what you have to do. Now, what you might want to do other things. So that's the countertop. We'll talk a minute about the stovetop. I'm assuming right now for this conversation that your stovetop is separate from your oven. If you have a stovetop, which is, I think, fairly common now, which is, let's say, stainless steel, gas, and then burners, right? That's, once again, I don't know what you have. I just know what I have. So I'm working on that premise. But if you have that, so it's extremely kosherable, not a problem at all. How do you kosher a stovetop? The answer is with libun, not hagola, but libun. I'll tell you, if you pour hot water on it too much, it ruins the that pilot thing. You know, it stops sparking. So the way you do this is you take a piece of that aluminum foil that you bought for the countertop, thick aluminum foil, and or a piece of blech, you know, like what we used to use as blechs, you know, a piece of tin. And you put it covering all the burners. If you have a blech, that, like that kind of a blech still, that's good. You cover all the burners and you turn on all the gas and you make it very, very hot under there. It gets to be maybe 1,000 degrees under there. And that koshers everything. You want to make sure, just as a practical advice, when you're doing that, that you cover only the burners and not the knobs, because it gets so hot, your knobs will melt. Your knobs will not survive this exercise. But you cover the burners, and everything that's underneath this piece of tin becomes kosher in approximately 10 minutes. My estimation is in 10 minutes. How do I know that it became kosher? Because why do I say 10 minutes? Because the halacha with libun is that if you would throw a match on top of the blech as it's koshering, if it ignites from the heat, you've done your job. Then it's kosher. In the Shulchan Aruch, they didn't talk about matches. Maybe they didn't have matches. They talked about a piece of straw. If it ignites, today the poskim say a match. If it ignites, that means that you made it hot enough. Shut off the gas. Be very, very careful. Let it cool. Take the blech off, and your stove now is kosher l'Pesach, providing it's a gas-burning stove. If you have a fancy thing like glass top, then you have a problem, because I really don't know how to kosher a glass top stove. First of all, understand, even though it's called glass top, it's not really glass. It's glass will not withstand the heat. There's a ceramic mixture in there which makes it heat proof. I don't know. You can't kosher ceramic. Also, you have a problem because I'm not so sure it's a smart idea to put a piece of aluminum foil on top of it and cover it, because I think that has to have some, it'll break that glass. It'll break the glass. We have in our house a glass blech. And at one time we covered it completely with aluminum foil and it cracked. So you can't do that. I heard that in Israeli Pesach stores, they sell some kind of a device which for a glass top oven, which is a piece of blech, let's say, when I say blech, I mean a piece of very thin steel, and it stands up maybe an inch or two above the stove. And that way you're not, you're letting it breathe. You're letting some air go through. I don't guarantee this, and I don't know. All I know is I don't know how to kosher a glass top stove. And I think anybody who thinks they do know how to kosher, it's a little bit dubious. They may not realize what we're dealing with here. Even worse is if you're really fancy and you have an induction stove. So an induction stove is a very cool kind of an item where somehow or another, miraculously, it doesn't even get hot until you put the pot on it. So now the pot makes it hot. I don't know what that material is, and I don't know how to kosher it. I don't know if you can use it on Pesach. So my advice to you is, if you have an induction stove or a glass top stove, you invest in a 2 or 4 burner gas stove and keep it for Pesach and put it somewhere on your countertop where it's gas, because I don't know how to kosher that. I want to finish off talking about the oven, but is there anything I obviously left out? Somebody? Rabbits and Haber usually have something I forgot.
And when you use the blech afterwards for Pesach, the blech that one uses to kasher, can you use it for Pesach?
You can. You've kashered it at the same time, you know. Assuming it's clean, you know, assuming it's 100% clean.
So somebody asked, do you need to, after you kasher the dishes, do you need to rinse them afterwards?
This is very interesting. Thank you for asking. This is the minhag. The minhag is that people kasher things and then they quickly rinse them in water. I guess the theory is that it tempers them, you know, like it closes it up again. It doesn't say this in halacha anywhere. There's no need to do this. You can kasher something and put it on the counter, assuming the counter is Pesach. You can put it on the counter and it's kosher. You don't have to put it in water. Some people have a minute to do that, to immediately put it in cold water. Maybe it's for safety reasons, but you don't have to do that. There are some things that you can kasher. I don't want to go through the whole list now, but there are some things that you can kasher, and that's if you make it so hot and then you put it in cold water, it cracks. So you got to be careful with that also. But there's no halacha of putting anything in cold water. You can let it naturally cool if you'd like to.
Someone asked if you have, you talked about, I imagine you're going to go through, you're going to go through whether an electric plata can be used for Pesach also, and whether an electric urn can be used for Pesach also. But somebody asked if you can kasher half of a stovetop and then the other half.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As long as it's covered. But let me say something about a blech. Theoretically.
Excuse me. Can I just go back to that? How could you kasher half of a stovetop at a time?
Because it gets hot enough under there. And the halacha, why not? Just like you could do a hagala.
But then
piece of metal here and then a piece of metal there.
Uh-huh. I see. But you couldn't use half of it for chametz and then use...
Is that what you're asking me? No, you can't do that.
I don't know what they're asking. But
you can't do that. You can kasher half at a time. Let's say you can... Uh-huh. One of the ways to kasher a stovetop is you take an aluminum pan, you know, like a chatpami, and if it's big enough, and you cover cover up the stove, and that then it heats up that way. But you'd have to find a chatpami, which is big enough to cover your stove, or... do it half and half. But you reminded me about the blech, which is very important.
All of these people are asking about silver and people are asking about glass. I'm done.
Okay. No, keep, you're helping me. Let me talk about the blech. I'll talk about silver and glass. A blech is a problem to kasher. I mean, they come, you know, nowadays, most people don't have a blech that they put on top of their stove, do they? Or am I wrong about this? Does anybody have a piece of tin like we used for years putting on top of their stove? Most people have an electric blech. They're so handy. Electric blech, and you put it into the wall and it gets hot. Those electric blechs are, they're metal, but they're covered with an enamel. That's one of the few uses of enamel these days, because, you know, everything else is stainless steel, but blechs don't seem to be stainless steel. I'm not sure why. That would be a good thing. But they're not stainless steel, they're enamel, and enamel can't be kosher. So there's only two things you can do with a blech. If it's a metal blech, one of them is you should spritz something on it just to get rid of the chametz. So spritz some Windex on it or something, or Easy Off or whatever they use here, Saint Moritz. And then you just have to cover it with aluminum foil for the whole Pesach. Or my advice to you is to buy a new blech for Pesach and keep it for Pesach. If you have, like I have, a glass blech, and the reason I bought a glass blech is because I think it's cool. But it's you can't kosher that for Pesach because you can't kosher. You can kosher glass, but not that glass, not that kind of glass. You're not going to get it clean enough, and you're not going to be able to kosher it. But let me talk about silver. Is like every other metal. You clean it. It doesn't have to be polished to be shining, but it can't have any stuff on it. When I say stuff, for the next 5 minutes of this shiur, stuff means you close your eyes and you feel it. So if you close your eyes and you feel it, that means that there's something there, which means you can't do a hagolah on it. Silver, once it's clean, even if it's not shined, it doesn't have to be polished, but it has to be clean. The same thing, put it in boiling hot water, and it's good to go. It's good for Pesach. You can do that with your bechers. You can do that with your wine, if you have a silver wine bottle, whatever. You could do that with your silverware, if you have silverware that's made out of silver. That's not a problem. So glass is interesting. Let me just give a quick, because you asked, let me just give a quick thing about glass. Glass is not a biblical item. We don't find glass in the Torah. Glass came about later. The only glass you find in the Torah, so it must be very ancient, is in the Beis HaMikdash. So, and in the Mishkan. So they kept a piece of the mun, and they put it, and they made it tzinsenas hamun, meaning that it was forever there to be able to see the miracle of the mun. And that mun was in a see-through vessel. So I presume it was glass. What else was going to be see-through except for glass? And that's how they kept the mun. Other than that, we don't find that people went to war with Midian and Moab or whatever, and they brought back glass kalim. And glass also, and what I mean to say by that is that it's not a biblical item. So it's not metal. It's not wood. It's not klicheres. It's a new thing. Also, another thing about glass is that it's changed over the years. I mean, even in my lifetime, glass has changed from being a sort of a rough item, a lot of times with colors in it and things like that, to being a very refined item. In glass, I'll spare you the whole sugya right now, but glass, some people say it's like metal. Some people say it's worse than metal, it's klicheres, because after all, it's made out of sand. And some people say, and this is the opinion of all the poskim of Ashkenaz, that it's such a tough material, glass, it's a wonderful material, that it doesn't absorb anything to begin with. So all you need to do is rinse it out, and you can do that all year long. You can use, theoretically, if you've cleaned it well, you can use a milchuk dish for fleishiks. I don't like to recommend doing that, but people that don't have enough space and people that don't have enough money, they do that. They use glass, as long as you're sure it's 100% glass, not other fancy names like Duralex or glass, or not plastic, just glass. Pesach, we generally don't kasher glass. It's just a chumrah of Pesach. It's not it's not really even a din. We tend not to kosher glass. If you have to kosher glass, you can kosher glass. So I don't want to confuse you here, but what I would say is that if you have circumstances where you need to kosher glass, so give me a call. That needs a psak to kosher glass. But the minhag of the world is we don't kosher anything which is glass on Pesach, even though you can use it from milchiks to fleishiks. Can I speak another for a minute? That's why I'm over time, but can I speak for a minute about the oven? Ovens are a little bit complicated. Ad kedei kach, there are people that don't use ovens on Pesach at all, but we're going here with Rav Moshe Feinstein, and with this I'm going to end off the evening, and that is you can kasher an oven. Oven means that you're not putting food generally speaking, directly on the oven racks. In other words, most people, I think, again, I'm saying most people, I haven't done research into this, but let's say you make challah. So I'm assuming that you're putting the challah on a baking pan. That's what I'm assuming. If that's not the case, you have to, what I'm saying might not be true, you have to ask a shayla. But if you put it on a baking pan, or you put your roast chicken with chametz in it in a pot, so then the oven is not really coming in direct contact with any of the chametz. What's happening is the chametz might be spritzing, which it doesn't with a challah, or there's the vapor, the smoke that comes out, the steam that comes out from the chicken and goes into the walls. Now, this has to be taken out in the following manner. First of all, the oven cannot be used for 24 hours. So that if there's any chametz in there, it's become chametz pagum. Second of all, the whole oven should be cleaned, because if there's chametz, actual chametz, actual particles of chametz, it's going to be very, very hard to kasher the way I'm describing how to kasher it. And third of all, you should spritz it with whatever oven cleaning you have, because that'll make it inedible to begin with. So when your oven is clean, I'm sure your oven's already clean. When your oven is clean, and let me define one more time what I meant by clean, what I mean by clean. Clean doesn't mean that you, dirty doesn't mean that you have a spot on it or something like that, or some kind of a stain. It's almost impossible to get up. That's chametz means that if you close your eyes and you rub your hands against the walls of the oven, you don't do this when it's hot, you do it when it's cold. If you rub your hands against the walls of the oven, you don't feel anything. If you feel something, then you need to clean it off. That's the important thing. So you clean it. After it's clean, you do something in between hagola and a libun. And listen to this, I'm going to teach you something new. It's called the libun kal. Or, you know, libun kal, like it's called, like it sounds, that's what it is. Meaning it's a sort of a quasi libun, which the poskim told us is equivalent to doing hagola. It doesn't destroy the chametz, but it does extract the chametz. I hope you remember the beginning of the shir. That's what a libun kal, not a libun gomer. How do you do a libun kal? Very, very easy. You take your clean oven that wasn't used for 24 hours and you were machmer by spritzing junk on it that makes it inedible. Then, but that only helps for the stuff on the outside. The St. Moritz doesn't help for the stuff that was absorbed into the walls of the oven. And that's why you have to do this. You take it, you take a can or a pot of water. You boil up the water on the stove. You don't spill the water into the stove. You take the boiling water, you take it and you put it into the oven. Now you're going to turn your oven on to the highest temperature for an hour. And what happens is the heat itself, the exact same amount of heat that went into the oven, will now extract any chametz from a clean oven, as long as it's chametz balua and not chametz davuk. Yes? The water, why are you putting water in there? The boiling water is equivalent to the steam that's coming out of your chicken soup. And that's going to go into the walls of the oven and extract the chametz from your clean oven. Let's say you have a part of the oven, or typically what I see every year is a part of the rack that you just can't get the stuff off. So on this, the libun kal does not work. You have to do a libun gomer. What's a libun gomer? You have to find somebody or yourself, take a blowtorch, and you have to destroy it, because it's not going to work with the method of extraction. It's only going to work with the method of destruction. And destruction means that you take that little piece that you can't get off on the corner between the grate, this part of the grate and that part of the grate. You take it and you burn it. You can theoretically put it on your stovetop and burn it that way, but you have to make sure you're getting every inch. Or what's easier is you take, you get a hold of a blowtorch, or maybe you come to my house if I have a blowtorch, and we destroy it for you. I love doing it. You destroy the chametz there. You have to do the same thing with the with any chametz that you can't get off the inside of your oven. Before you go ahead and kasher it with a libun kal, if there's a piece you can't get to, you have to do a libun gamur. I would also suggest one last thing that I realized, that the ovens now have these fans that are up on top there, that you should upwardly spritz some stuff there. So if there's actually any chametz in there, it makes it that it's not real chametz. And any way you can clean it, vacuum it. Don't take apart your oven, because then it breaks the oven. But any way you can clean inside that fan, that's a good thing to do. I don't think it's possible. You have to ask an expert to cover it. I don't think you're supposed to do that. I don't think you're supposed to cover it. But I'm not 100% sure what the mechanics is on that. So we've kashered the oven. I want to, one last thing I just reminded myself of. If you happen to be one of the two things, if you happen to be one of those that have a fan above your stove, you know, like an exhaust fan, so that fan is full of chametz. That's a chametz trap. And there's only two things you can do with that. One is you can cover the whole thing with aluminum foil. And this you have to do, because what's going to happen is the steam from your chicken soup is going to go up to that fan, grab the chametz, and bring it right back down. So you have to cover it with aluminum foil. Or when we had such a thing, what I used to do is I had special, like the parts that go on top of the fan. We used to get new ones for Pesach and put that on. So that's, if you have a fan, that's a special thing. The last thing I want to say is that if you have a self-cleaning oven, gets very, very hot. But if you put something, if you turn the self-cleaning oven on according to instructions, then that's not a libun kal, that's a libun gamur. A self-cleaning oven is a self-kashering oven. Your built for Pesach house is going to have a self-cleaning oven and a granite countertop. A machaya. Because then you can kasher the countertop, and you can kasher the oven, and if it's safe, you can even put things in the kosher, in the self-cleaning oven and kasher it that way. Like you can put your neighbor's oven racks in there and kasher it that way. So there's two things that you could, with a self-cleaning oven, that you can do. And then your kosher lepesach. Okay, let me take one or two questions here, and then.
Hi, Haber.
Yeah.
With the self-cleaning oven, if it doesn't come clean in the first time that you run the cycle, you run it a second time. How many times?
No, it's not important for us that it's clean. It's important for us that the food value is destroyed. Whether it's clean to your eye doesn't mean anything. It's not edible. It's not food. You've done a libun on it. Period.
Even if that's simple.
If you have a self-cleaning oven, it's a self-koshering oven. If you still see char or stains or whatever you might see afterwards, it doesn't make any difference. The only place it does make a difference is in the gasket on the door, because the gasket on the door actually does not get exposed to the self-cleaning oven. It's made like that. But on the other hand, it also does not get exposed to your Pesach tikka food that you're making there. So what the nice recommendation for that is not to worry about it too much, but take some of your Windex and spritz the gasket all the way around. So if there's actual chametz in there, you don't really have to go in there so much with and ruin it. You just have to spritz it and take away chametz value from it, clean it the best you can, and then it's kosher. Anybody else have a question before? Yeah.
How long do you put the oven cleaner, the oven on in a self-cleaning oven? It varies. You could set the time.
I know. So I've discovered that every brand of self-cleaning oven is different in what temperature it gets to. And by the way, the Israeli ones don't get as hot, that's a regulation here, as the Americans ones do. The American ones get, I think, to something like 1400 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. I'm not sure what it gets to, but everyone is different. What you want to do is put it on the what's called the highest and longest setting that they recommend. You don't want your house to be self-cleaned. You just want the oven to be self-cleaned. But you just put it on the highest setting they have. But if it's self-cleaning, They used to have something called continuous cleaning ovens. They almost don't make them anymore. That's a whole big different issue. Those are made out of ceramic and they don't really self-clean. But I'm talking about a self-cleaning oven that you have a setting for and the door locks because it's too hot. A serious self-cleaning oven is a self-koshering oven. So we've taken care of the refrigerator. I'm just thinking that you're only taking care of the refrigerator, the oven, the countertop, the sink, the stovetop, and the blech and the fan on top of it. We've taken care of the whole kitchen tonight. Yes, everyone agrees?
Yeah. Okay, one other question. For if you get hold of a blech to clean your stove, wash your aluminum, your stainless steel top, does the blech have to be a Pesach blech or a Chametz blech?
Doesn't make any difference. It's the heat that we're looking for.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to be Chametz stick after you do this.
The microwave and the electric Shabbos.
Microwave, thank you. Electric what?
Shabbos urn.
I didn't talk about microwaves. You are right. Microwave is on the one hand problem. By the way, I'm overtime, so if somebody needs to hang up, I won't feel bad. A microwave is interesting. On the one hand, it's plastic, and we don't kosher plastic. There's a lot of plastic inside those microwaves. On the other hand, what's interesting about microwaves is they don't get hot. It doesn't work like an oven, right? So the food gets hot, and the only heat in the walls of the microwave is the heat which came from the food, which made it hot. It's not hot because it's an oven. So you can make something. You can make a piece of chicken very hot in the microwave, and then a minute later you could touch the walls of the oven and it'll be warm, but it's not so hot. So even if it's plastic, it's kosherable. Here's how you kosher a microwave. You clean it very, very well. Where there's an area for a fan, you should spritz something in there a little bit just to get away any kind of chametz that might come in contact with your food. You take a glass of boiling hot water and you put it into the microwave. And my newest suggestion is you put a little bit of soap in the water. Why? Because not to clean it. The soap's not for the purpose of the soap is not to clean it. The soap, the water, as you turn your microwave on for, let's say, 10 minutes. So the water starts to boil and the water goes all over and extracts any chametz that can be there. That's a hagala. Why soap? Because the soap does a different thing and it's pogame. The chametz. It also destroys the chametzes in there. So you got a two-prong approach here. So that's a nice thing. You put a little bit of dishwashing soap inside the boiling water, and now you're being pogame any chametz davuk that might be there. But you wash the microwave, clean the microwave, you spritz the microwave, and put it in with a glass of boiling hot water with a drop of soap for 10 minutes or whatever your average cook is in a microwave. But 10 minutes usually does the trick, enough to get the water to be boiling, stay boiling, and your microwave is fine for Pesach. The only thing is that, like, let's say you have a dish on the bottom in a microwave, and that might be like some type of a ceramic material, which you can't kosher. So what I do is I take that, clean it, obviously, and you don't want to put it in the self-cleaning oven or kosher with a blowtorch or anything, it's going to break. So what you do is you cover it with saran wrap, plastic wrap. And if you cover it with plastic wrap, so now that's 100% the same thing as aluminum foil. Use in other places, you don't put aluminum foil in a microwave, but you can put plastic wrap in a white microwave. And if you cover it all good, then you have no question on that either.
Like how the urn?
Urn. urn, like you had to know this. You have to ask yourself very, very carefully, how do you clean your urn all year round? Because many people clean their urn with vinegar, and vinegar is chametz. So if you've cleaned your urn with vinegar, your urn is chametz stick, and just put it away. If you're careful never to clean your urn, the inside of your urn I'm talking about, with vinegar, you use either kosher lepesach. It's a good idea, by the way, just buy a couple extra bottles of kosher lepesach vinegar and use that to clean your urn. Then it's not chametz. It never became chametz. The only thing that become chametz is maybe the outside. The outside you wash off and you give it a spritz with the Windex to kill any actual chametz that might be there. And your urn is kosher lePesach. I'm talking now about a metal urn, a plastic urn, like a, you know, a kumkum, what we call here a kumkum in our house. So that is a little bit different because that is plastic. First of all, it's not metal. Mostly, at least mine isn't metal. It's plastic. And when you pour it, let's say, pour water on top of the oatmeal. So now what's happening is the oats are chametz gomer, and the smoke is making that chametz, and there's no way to kosher. It's plastic. We don't kosher for Pesach. So if you have a plastic urn and you use it in the way that I'm describing, and by the way, there are some teas, fancy teas that could be chametz, or oatmeal is certainly chametz. There's things that you might be using it for chametz, you have to remember. I think a plastic kumkum, best thing is to get a different one for Pesach. The metal urns, you know, like a Shabbos thing. So that you can easily kosher, or you don't have to kosher, assuming you only used it for water. I checked something, by the way. Maybe you have I have an espresso coffee machine. So the Nespresso coffee that I buy is all kosher lePesach all year round, including the decaffeinated. I called them and asked them as a hechsher for Pesach. They do have some fancy flavors and stuff, which I don't buy, which they I don't know if they're kosher lePesach or not. You have to check if you like to have like hot cocoa or something like that. But I just am strictly coffee. And therefore, there's nothing ever comes chametz with that. Unless you like really wash it with chametz and things like that, but the insides of it, the kishkas, are not chametz. The cleaner is also not chametz. In fact, the cleaner that comes with it is acidic. And if there is any chametz, it actually is pogame the tam of it. So all you have to do with those kind of coffee makers is wash the outside, and then you can use it. This is an extremely important development for the Simchas HaChag on Pesach. That you can have coffee.
Back to the oven, not the racks, but the pans that they have in Israeli ovens, like the baking sheets that you just put in when people use all year. Like I bake rogalach on them and so forth. So can those be kashered for Pesach?
Nah. That's comets gummer.
Can you put it in the oven on a self-clean cycle? If there
put
is
it on a self-cleaning thing? Oven. But by the way, when you put things in a self-cleaning oven, you run the risk that it's going to be destroyed.
Okay.
So don't jump and throw everything into the self-cleaning oven, please.
Two other questions. What about the filter machines, like the on-tap filter machines that we have?
There's no issue at all.
In years past, you used to say that you can kosher glass items by soaking them in water and changing the water every day for 3 days.
I said before that I asked if somebody wants to use chametz glass for Pesach, send me a WhatsApp and I will explain to you what to do. I don't want to confuse it right now with that.
Okay. And what about supplements that say that they're gluten-free?
Gluten-free does not mean wheat-free. It can be gluten-free, and gluten-free could be 100% chametz. It has to be wheat-free. But if it says on the bottle that contains no gluten or wheat, which is what they say usually, so then probably it contains no gluten or wheat. It may contain kidneys, but it doesn't make any difference because you're just swallowing it down, and it's not a problem with kidneys at all.
Supplement, not a medication.
If it's wheat free, it's wheat free.
Okay.
And they don't have supplements in a capsule. Doesn't have any kidneys in it either. In a pill, in my checking, and I did some pretty extensive checking on this, they don't use and most it's supposed to be healthy, right? So they don't use cornstarch in them. They use some other thing, either a chemical, which is a harmless chemical, or some other food grade item. But even if it's kidneys in a pill, it doesn't bother me. What bothers me is kidneys in a syrup, because kidneys in a syrup is all about hana, and we don't eat kidneys. So that becomes more of an issue, or certainly chametz in a syrup. I know some of the cough medicines have actual chametz in it. So you got to check. That should be with a hechsher. If you're using a cough medicine, You should get a hechsher on it. Okay. We done? Thank you very much for coming. I wish everybody a good Tvach and a good Chodesh. And if you have any questions, ask my wife. She's good at the products and everything. And if you have a question, halacha, feel free to ask me. I will try as best as I can to answer quickly. Have kavana. I was just end with this. You could have kavana. There's a special, you know, as you're doing all the cleaning for Pesach and Bedikas Chametz and all. So, you know, sometimes you think something's clean and it's not really clean, you know? And when you start cleaning it, you see it's not so clean. And the same thing, the Svarim all say, same thing is with us. Like sometimes we think, you know, like Aniba Seder, you know, like my midos are good. And then when you're a bodek, b'chorin u'b'satkin, you know, you check all the cracks and crevices, you see, maybe there's something you can fix. So Pesach, Erev Pesach is a time when if you have kavana, you're able to really do a thorough cleansing of the neshama. And that's a very special opportunity. There's a special or min hashamayim to have. So it doesn't mean like you're drinking boiling hot water or something, just with your own neshama, with your own heart. You're just finding little things like sometimes you take it out and say, what's going on here? Why do I always get bothered? Why does that person get on my nerves? Why do I have a certain aversion to certain mitzvahs? When you ask yourself these questions and do a little bit of a cleansing, that's a special mitzvah to do on Erev Pesach. Ganendi, I saw you asked a question. What did you? Okay.
Oh, I asked about glass.
Oh, I talked about glass a couple times. Yeah. Okay. What?
Can I ask you, when you were talking about doing the runoff counters with all the hot water every inch of it with boiling hot water with a kettle, do you still need to cover it after that?
No. If you have granite or metal or wood, you don't have to cover it. If you have formica, you have to cover it. If you have Caesar stone, you have to cover it. Okay, good Tvach, a good Chodesh, and thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you.